Welcome to this podcast of sermons from University Christian Church, Disciples of Christ in Fort Worth, Texas. UCC is a community of faith where all are welcome, where we worship in a spirit of togetherness, where we embrace curiosity, community, and compassion. We don't claim to have all the answers, nor do we expect you to check your brain at the door, but rather we gather together to find the courage to engage the scriptures and to ask the big questions about who we are as people of faith, and who God is calling us to be. At UCC, we seek the sacred, commit to love, and empower to serve. And in so doing, we work together to transform the world through Christ's courageous love. My name is Reverend Dr. Russ Peterman, and I'm the senior minister here at UCC. And so most of these sermons are from me.
So you see what I mean about being a good movie? It's all sorts of twists and turns and special effects and lots of drama. And church drama, which is the best kind of drama. It's interesting, isn't it, though, how easy it is for us to do what those early apostles did, to draw lines, to choose sides, determining who's in and who's out, who's worthy and who still needs a little bit of work. We're so quick, aren't we, to distinguish between us and them. Now, the Bible, especially the Hebrew Scriptures, the Old Testament, is filled with stories about this deadly tribalism that takes place, and we see it all the time, don't we? Even in our lives today. There is scientific data, of course, which gives us insight into how this happens. In fact, back in 1968, there was an elementary school teacher by the name of Jane Elliott, and she conducted this famous experiment with her students in the days after the assassination of Martin Luther King. And she essentially divided her elementary school class by eye color. And the brown-eyed kids were told that they were better, that they were the in-group. While the blue-eyed children were told that they were less than the brown-eyed kids, and they were the out-group. Now, suddenly, these former classmates who had once played happily side-by-side on the playground began taunting and torturing one another. And just so we're clear, it wasn't just the brown-eyed kids. The blue-eyed kids, too, once the roles were reversed, they were just as quick to attack the brown-eyed children. And since that experiment, research have conducted thousands of studies to understand this in-group, out-group response. And now with these MRI scans that we see, researchers can actually see what part of our brains fire up when we perceive a member of an out-group. There's this phenomenon known as out-group homogeneity effect, which is a whole lot harder to say than you might think. And this helps us see people in our group, us. We tend to see those folks as being unique, individually motivated. While at the same time, we often see a member of the out-group, them, that they're just the same as everybody else in that group. You know what that's like. They're all the same, those people. When we encounter this out-group member, our amygdala, this part of our brain that processes anger and fear, that's the part that fires. The more we perceive this person outside of our group as a threat, the more willing we are to treat them poorly and badly. And just so we're clear, no one is above that. Not even Jesus. Do you remember the story of the Syrophoenician woman? This woman comes to Jesus with a sick child. She's a Gentile, just like Cornelius in our story this morning. She's not a Jew. But still, she comes to Jesus and says, "Jesus, I need your help. Please, can you heal my daughter?" And Jesus says, I'm sorry, I was sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Now this woman, she's in crisis mode. She doesn't let up, and she begs Jesus, "Please, please, can you do something, do anything?" And Jesus says, finally, it's not right. Do you remember this story? It's not right to take the bread out of the children's mouths and feed it to the dogs. Jesus, really? They're dogs? You see what the assumption is, what's being insinuated. But then the woman in that moment, she says to Jesus, look, Jesus, even the dogs eat the crumbs who fall from the master's table. And in that moment, though, just like Peter's experience, Jesus' eyes are opened and he is convicted. He's converted in that moment. And he heals the daughter. And in that moment, her life was changed. And some would say so was his. Maybe even his whole ministry. His whole mission changed. And some might even say that the whole world changed in that moment. When even Jesus came to the realization that God's love was bigger than even he had imagined at that point. There's something that happens when we are courageous enough to look at our own biases, to look at where it starts. There's a book out right now by Sarah Holland and Beth Silvers. The book is called I Think You're Wrong, But I'm Listening. The subtitle is a Guide to Grace-Filled Political Conversations, and in it they say this: a hard spiritual truth we all learn over and over again as people of faith is that any problem, be it political or otherwise, typically starts with us. That blaming and trying to control others is never the solution. That we have to continually and thoroughly and critically examine our own beliefs and our own values. And we have to face our own weaknesses, our own mistakes, our own limitations with humility and grace. The only problem, of course, is that those characteristics, humility and grace, they seem to be in short supply these days, in a time of drawing lines of us and them, especially when it comes to hard conversations about things like religion and politics, especially when we group all of them together. One of my favorite lines from my favorite author, Anne Lamott, she says, "You can safely assume that you have created God in your own image when it turns out that God hates all of the same people that you do." You know, research shows that it is difficult to change our minds once they've been made up. My friend Ryan Price is a minister across town. He said to me recently, "We like to be right, but even more, we hate to be wrong." Do you remember Dilbert, the cartoon? There's this one where the manager walks in, and the manager says that the CEO of Apple says that a good leader should admit when they are wrong. "But that won't work for me," the manager says, "because I'm never wrong. The best that I can do is to admit when you are wrong." Someone recently said about a preacher, "They were frequently wrong, but never in doubt." Now, I won't say who said that, but I share a closet with her. They were frequently wrong, but never in doubt. Do you know someone like that? Are you someone like that? In many ways, that's Peter. If you look back at the story, not just the one before us today, but throughout the Gospels, he was frequently wrong, but never, ever in doubt. Do you remember when he stood before Jesus, when Jesus said that he was going to have to die? And he says, "No, not you, Jesus." Or later that night before his crucifixion, he says, "Jesus, I will never betray you." Often wrong, but never in doubt. But then he has this encounter, this vision that convicts, it converts him. He's in Joppa and he's praying and he falls into this trance. He has this dream and something like this large sheet comes down from heaven and sort of lays down in front of him like a big picnic blanket. And milling around, there are all of these animals. There's farm animals and wild animals, and there are birds and shellfish. There are chicken and beef. There's all sorts of the good stuff. Like a great big smorgasbord, and the voice says, kill and eat, Peter. But again, Peter's a good Jew. Lived up to the dietary laws. I don't do that, he said. That stuff is taboo. It's unclean. But then three times the voice speaks and says, it's okay. What the Lord has called unclean, you must not call unclean. And almost immediately the vision ends and the lights in the movie theater comes back on and the sheet goes back up to heaven and Peter is standing there scratching his head, wondering what it all means, when about that time there's a knock at the door, and it's some Gentiles. It's them, the unclean. But they want to know about Jesus. Tell us about this Jesus, Peter. And suddenly, Peter has this moment of conversion when his eyes are open, his heart is transformed, and he realizes that that dream, that vision that he had, that wasn't about animals at all. It was about people. It was about God's people. People that he thought were unclean, they weren't unclean after all. Turns out they, too, were loved by God. Now, I'm a bit of a Bible nerd, and so I find stuff like this interesting, but do you remember where this takes place? They're in Joppa. Now, some of you may remember that last summer I did a sermon series on the story of Jonah, and the city of Joppa plays an important role in that story, too. You remember the story. Jonah is called by God to go to Nineveh, which is hell on earth. I mean, nobody wants to go to Nineveh, but Jonah is called to go there and to preach and teach and tell them all about God. But Nineveh is where all the bad people go. They're the unclean. It's them. And so he ran away as fast as he could in the other direction. And he ends up in a port city, Joppa, and he gets on a boat. Now, you know the story of Jonah. There's a big storm and a whale, and Jonah has this conversion experience in the belly of a whale. And in that moment, his heart is opened, his mind is changed, and he ends up going to Nineveh after all. Now, Peter, our unlikely hero in this story, the one who was often wrong but never in doubt, do you remember what his given name was? Before Jesus came to him and said, you're Peter. You're not Simon anymore. You're Peter. You're a rock. And on this rock, I'm going to build my church. Do you remember what his name was before that? Simon Bar Jonah. Bar, in Aramaic, means son of. Simon, son of Jonah. And so just like his ancestors before him, Peter has this conversion experience, and his heart is open, his mind is changed. What is that issue for you? That maybe you might not be right about. Who are those people that maybe you're wrong about? We all have things that we think are unclean that God calls clean. We all have those people that we call profane, and God simply calls them children. You see, if there is hope for the church in these days when there is so much division and so much dissension, then we need to pray that we will have visions that will bring us all together. That we need to be open to the work of God's healing, God's reconciling heart. William Barclay told a story that I think is especially appropriate for Memorial Day. It was the story of a group of soldiers during World War II that lose a buddy in battle. A friend is shot and killed, and they want to give their fallen comrade a decent burial. And so there in the French countryside, they find this old church. And this church has behind it a graveyard that's surrounded by a stone fence. And they go and they take their friend and they find the priest and ask if their friend could be buried in the church graveyard. And the priest simply asked a simple question. Was he Catholic? Well, no, he wasn't. And the priest says, "I'm sorry, then. Our graveyard is reserved only for members of the Holy Church. But you can, I tell you what, you can bury your friend just outside of the fence, and I will personally make sure that his grave is taken care of." And so that's what they did. They proceeded to bury their friend just outside of the graveyard, just on the other side of the fence. Months, maybe years later, when the war had finally ended, the soldiers were getting ready to come back home. They decided, before they did that, though, they would go and pay their last respects to their fallen friend. And so they went back to that hillside, to that countryside, find that old church and that graveyard. And they found it, and they walked to where they thought they had buried their friend. But they couldn't find his grave, and so they walked all the way around the fence. There was no sign of it anywhere. So they finally went and found that old priest. Said, "Sir, we can't find our friend's grave." And the priest simply says, "After you buried your fallen friend, it just didn't seem right to me that he should be buried out there outside the fence. So you moved his grave?" he said. No, I moved the fence. I moved the fence. You see, if the gospel, if the good news of Jesus Christ means anything, it means this, that the old boundaries and barriers are gone, that a new way of life has been proclaimed. And sometimes it happens all at once, like it did for Peter, when our eyes are opened, and sometimes it happens stone by stone. But in those moments when we dare to make ourselves vulnerable, God has a way of shaking up our lives, of breaking down the former barriers, and setting us free. And so as we go about the business of being church, we need to remember that the world is watching to see if we have anything to offer everyone else in our culture that is all too often characterized by dissension and division. The world is watching to see if we can listen to one another, being willing to discern where God's Spirit might be leading us. As we go about the business of being church, we need to remember that the world is watching to see if we are willing to move fences, to broaden the table, to make sure that there is room in the family of God for everyone, us and them.
So thanks for listening. I do hope and pray that you found this sermon to be engaging and thoughtful and inspiring and maybe even a little challenging. I also hope that if you get the chance to join us on Sunday mornings in our sanctuary, you will. I think you'll find the welcome warm and inviting, the music inspiring, and there will always be a place at the table for you, regardless of who you are, or where you come from, or where you are on your spiritual journey. Just know that you're welcome here. And if you'd like to support the production of this podcast, in the ongoing mission and ministry of UCC, or to simply find out more about this community of faith, we invite you to go to universitychristian.org. Grace and peace to you.